There are approximately 6,000 homeless men, women, and children in the Philadelphia area. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission strives to feed, clothe, and shelter every member of the homeless community that steps through our doors. At Sunday Breakfast, we serve 3 healthy meals a day on every day of the year. An average of 600 meals are served daily. With your help, Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission will continue to ensure that no one goes hungry in Philadelphia. You can help by hosting a food drive, donating, or volunteering today. It only costs $1.95 to feed one person. Please help Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission feed the homeless today. To make your gift or learn more, visit sundaybreakfast.org or text the word THANKS to 41444. That's text THANKS to 41444. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission. Provide a meal. Give hope. Change a life.
Homeworks Premium Thrift is a shopping experience unlike any other. Browse our 12,000 square foot store for gently used selection of clothing, shoes, books, kitchenware, home decor, furniture, appliances, and more. We offer free pickup of large loads and large items such as furniture and appliances. We are located in Douglasville on Route 422, and we are open Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, Saturday, 9:30 to 4:30, and closed on Sunday. Visit us at homeworkspremiumthrift.org. Like us on Facebook. We hope you'll stop in and check us out. You'll be glad you did. We help you help others.
Your furry family members matter, too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets. So come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.
You're the God of this.
Hope Rescue Mission is a sponsor of Your Family Matters. For 121 years, Hope Rescue Mission, located at 645 North 6th Street in Reading, has provided a daily safe haven while ministering to the spiritual, physical, and emotional needs of the homeless in Berks County. We share the hope that can only be found in Christ, transforming the lives of those in need. Our programs feed, house, clothe, and guide men so that they experience a better quality of life. Over 10,000 square feet of thrift stores are located directly behind the mission, which is open on Mondays through Fridays from 8 to 5 and Saturdays from 8 to 4. We invite you to stop by and shop our large selection of gently used furniture, clothing, and homeless items as you support Hope. We're pleased to accept your donations of any of these items. Contact us at 610-375-4224 to arrange for a pickup at your home or business. Since the cost needed to operate and care for these men continues to grow, your support and continuing partnerships are so greatly appreciated. We receive no outside or government funding as we strive with the Lord's guidance and direction to restore those who seek our help to lead upright and productive lives. Please keep Hope Rescue Mission in your thoughts and prayers as we serve those in need. Again, thank you, Hope Rescue Mission, for being a sponsor of Your Family Matters.
When you're in the Lehigh Valley, you're welcome to worship with us at Calvary Baptist Church, 5300 Green Pond Road in Easton, Pennsylvania. Our worship services are each Sunday at 8:45 and 10:20. We seek to be a church that practices the ABCs of the Christian faith. A, we try to appeal to all ages of people. B, be Bible-based in our preaching and teaching ministry. And C, be Christ-centered in all our ministries. God bless you and have a great day.
That was Pastor Larry Bird. Check out his website at calvarybaptistpa.org.
This is Your Family Matters with Carla DeDessi. Good morning. This is Carla DeDessi. Thank you for joining me this morning and every Friday morning from 8 until 9 here at 1180 WFYL. Your family matters because it does matter. I am excited to have in studio with me this morning Faye Hall and Jeff Merkett. They did join me about 1 year ago. Faye is the program director. And Jeff is the co-director of Healing Hearts Family-Based Mental Health in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And they are helping so many children. Did you know that there's millions of children who experience early trauma and attachment disruptions, whether through death, physical or sexual abuse, domestic, community or school violence, terrorism, or any other tragic events? Parents and professionals need not just vague theories, but a proactive plan for healing relationships with these children that are having issues. And this is their area of expertise. I have a lot of friends who have adopted children or they foster children, and people like Faye Hall and Jeff Merkett are truly godsends to these families. And I'm so excited because they have now packaged and published all of their information for all of us in a book that was just launched and released. So this is cutting edge information. Their book is entitled Healing Traumatized Children, Navigating Recovery for Children with Turbulent Pasts. Faye and Jeff, thank you so much for joining me in the studio this morning.
Thank you, Carla.
Thank you for having us.
How was the traffic? How was the Christmas traffic driving in from Harrisburg?
It's actually, we got to watch the sunrise.
Beautiful. So you weren't traumatized by
it? No.
Okay, good.
No, it was a nice trip.
So let's just get right into this because your book that you have written, and actually your professions, help so many families and children. So first and foremost, I'd like to ask you why this book and why now?
Well, this book started in 2000. It's been a long process, and it actually started because I'm an adoptive mom and couldn't figure out how to parent my adopted son, because what I was doing with my birth children just wasn't working. We actually thought he was getting worse. The behaviors were escalating. We needed to find new ways to parent him, and Jeff and I started collaborating in 2000 and going to a lot of trainings, doing a lot of research in the fields of attachment and trauma. And over the years, the last 15 years, it's just escalated. And our program is 5.5 years old, and it was built on the information that we gathered from the 10 years prior of working in the research about my son.
What is attachment disorder, Jeff? Because I know that I've heard a lot of people say, oh, it doesn't really exist. You know, they're just naughty children. What is attachment disorder?
Well, I look at the attachment disorder as a set of core beliefs that are built into a child pre-verbally before they have the ability to utilize language. And basically that belief is organized around the concept of they're bad, the primary caregivers are hurtful and dangerous, and the world is a very dangerous place. And that's in direct opposition to what most of us get in normal parenting. And what that becomes, as that gets built into their little minds, then it becomes a filter that they run everything through. And so like you were saying, Carla, foster and adoptive families, they bring these children into their family systems. What they find is they're not working with a clean slate like they would be with a birth child. They're now working with a slate that already has something written on it. And that something is typically in direct opposition to, what the parents want to put in there and what the parents, they want the child to live with.
And what might we see in these children who we believe have reactive attachment disorders? How do they behave?
Very controlling. That's one of the first, the hallmarks of it is the kids need to be in control. So you get a lot of opposition. not following through with the parents' demands, and the inability to have an emotional regulation. So what you see are a lot of tantrums, aggression, moving to more physical violence, damaging property, and then the list just goes on.
Now, it's very, very important to understand that, that those behaviors that you're seeing from the children, they don't have the motivations that we would assume when we hear those behaviors. What's actually happening for these children is they're trying to make themselves, with that control that Faye was talking about, they're actually trying to make themselves feel safe in a world where otherwise they feel very in danger.
Or out of control, perhaps. Let me ask you this question. I have a friend who has adopted a child that even though he does his homework every night, for some reason he doesn't hand it in to the teacher every morning.
Yes, that's really common. They'll hide it. They'll destroy it. They'll tell the teacher that it was lost. There's a conflict when Jeff was talking about their internal beliefs, the belief that, you know, we typically have are, I'm a good enough student. I can be successful. These kids have a belief that I'm bad and I could fail. Therefore, they don't take chances. They don't take risks and handing in the paperwork to see if it's good enough. They're okay with or actually can find comfort in being a bad kid, that, you know, with quotations around it, because that's who they see themselves as being.
I like to ask parents when they tell me about this problem, I like to ask them, why do you turn in your homework? Why, when you were assigned homework, why did you do it and turn it in? And the answer to that question is because inside you believe you're the type of person that does that. That you have a belief about yourself that you're a good person and good people do their homework and turn it in. And because of that, you feel uncomfortable when you turn that when you do not turn that homework in. When you don't do your work, there's a feeling inside you that just, it's not right. It's just not you. Well, these children actually have that same feeling when they do turn the homework in, because their internal picture is, I'm not a very good person, and I'm not valuable, and I'm not particularly cooperative. And so when they do that homework and then turn it in, the school, of course, gives that message back, you're a good kid, you've just done your homework, and that's just as uncomfortable to them as the message back that you are not a good kid.
And it's... teachers struggle because they don't know how to praise the kids. Many times when we do trainings for teachers, we are very specific in how you praise, because we've had kids. One client in particular, I remember he brought home a paper that was really nice, and the parents posted it on the refrigerator like we all do as parents, and they were talking about it, and the kid actually ended up being hospitalized because there was so much focus on the positives. He couldn't handle the distress inside, the conflict of, it's like he feels like an alien. Don't they know that they're talking about a bad kid? And you know, the parents thought they were doing a good thing. They were very pleased with the child's progress.
On the other hand, do these children want to be ignored? Or do they want, like you're explaining to me, that they feel terrible on the inside and they feel like everyone, their world around them is terrible, the parents, the teachers. But if we punish them for what they're doing, what happens then? Because they don't have control if we're punishing them. I'm just trying to understand.
Well, what we have to remember is that these children have the same parts as everyone else. They've just learned something pre-verbally that's not true. So even though when we punish them, if you notice, very often they'll be, if you read their nonverbal messages, what they're doing, it actually comforts them instead of distresses them. And the reason for that is we're always, as human beings, we're always acting to make our internal picture of ourselves true in the outside world. But at the same time, these they have normal, healthy parts too. And those parts, they want praise and they want to be, contributive, and they want to be appreciated. But when they start to act on those wants, then they also have another part that gets very terrified and very scared. So what we teach people is we teach people, and we have techniques and interventions for how to provide that. Well, the first thing they need is to notice it, that they have that counter feeling much stronger than everyone else. Because these children are always asking themselves, what's wrong with me?
So let's go back to your book, Healing Traumatized Children, Navigating Recovery for Children with Turbulent Pasts. I know that you've had wonderful reviews and endorsements. Tell us a little bit about Daniel Hughes, PhD.
From a parent's point of view, I met Dan way back in 99. My son was in a residential treatment facility, and Dan was training the facility in attachment and trauma, and he became the consulting therapist for my son's case. So at that point, I learned just from Dan sitting in sessions. He ran the support group at the facility. And since then, he's become internationally famous in its DDP is the therapy, the modality that he teaches. It's dyadic developmental psychotherapy, specifically with these kids. We're very fortunate that Dan is now local. He used to be in Maine, and that's where Jeff and I had gone for our trainings. But now he's in Maine, and we get to consult with him once a month on all of on our caseload. So he's mentored us through this whole family-based process.
We're very lucky because Dan actually even wrote the foreword to our book.
I see that, and a wonderful foreword he wrote for you. Tell me a little bit about the award, the USA Best Book Award that you won this year.
Our book just came out in October, and then soon after that, we were notified that we were a finalist in the Best Book Awards for 2015 in the Parenting and Family category. There were six finalists, one winner, and I thought we were really fortunate that we ranked right up there with the Whole Brain Child Workbook with Dan Siegel, because I mean, to us, he's kind of the god of in the trauma world, and we ended up in the same category.
You've been placed in that sainthood category. So let's go back to the book again, talking about children. If we do not get to these children in time, what happens to them as adults? Are there adults walking around that could have benefited from your techniques in this book, and what do they look like?
Well, the worst case scenario, I suppose, they would probably develop what in the psychiatric community they call an Axis II diagnosis, which would be more personality-based. Oftentimes, borderline personality or
antisocial. All the access to the personality disorders, histrionic, dependent. Many of those are results of the trauma and not being able to have a person to turn to for comfort, the ability to talk about their internal distress. So their personality becomes formed around the traumatic memories even, and they can't get out of those.
Then what ends up happening is when they try to have relationships, they sort of reproduce that trauma in a variety of ways. So they become adults who just are not very good at long-term, deep, intimate relationships, and can be very destructive.
And every time they have a destructive relationship as adults, I suppose that's kind of reestablishing, and they have this kind of downward spiral that I see on page 17 of your book, mm-hmm. where instead of creating that healthy response, they keep kind of digging themselves into a greater hole.
Yeah. They grow more isolated. They reinforce that false belief in themselves that they're not valuable, that they're unlovable, that people who do love them are hurtful and untrustworthy, and that the world itself is a dangerous place. And human beings are designed to share those core beliefs in relationship. So as they have these relationships, they end up in some ways traumatizing the people they're having relationships with. Many of the parents we work with and that are caught in that downward spiral you were mentioning, they wind up isolated, separated from their own support systems, friends and family, and trying to raise a child basically in a vacuum with no supports.
Our program is designed to, we're last intervention before children are removed from the home to be placed in a treatment facility like a residential or a therapeutic. It's not foster care, but it's a therapeutic home. So we're the last effort, and the state's willing to pay for us to go in, and we're given 8 months to do the work. Many times we come in at the end of the downward spiral where the marriage is breaking up. One of the mom or dad is wanting to leave. They're wanting to have the child removed. So we're starting at the worst possible place, and we have to put them back on track. And sometimes we just focus on the marriage first, and that's it, because without that foundation, there's really no family.
8 months does not seem like a lot of time, and it also seems like this is not preventative. It seems like, no, it would be great to get you out the minute that that foster child is in the home or that family adopts that beautiful child, because my goodness gracious, by the time you get out and you're at that crisis point, that's really quite a job for you both.
The ideal for us is that we become trainers in the foster adoptive world, so that this is the model that they're working from.
Okay.
Not something that you end up a couple years later where everything's falling apart.
Because I'm sure that we never want to, the worst case scenario is when we have to take a child out of a home. And then, so basically we're saying to them, I assume, mm-hmm, that they've failed again. And that's such a sad place to be. You know, last time you were in studio with me, you educated me about so many things, but you talked to me about how those first 2 years of life are so vital in development in our children. For those families who are listening, and maybe they have a child, they're a safe house right now for a child before they go to the foster family or before they go to the adoptive family, tell us a little bit about those first 2 years, why they're so important.
I think Jeff has the specialty on that piece, because he does a nice presentation about how co-regulation occurs. So why don't you do just a little bit about that?
Just a little bit, eh?
Just, yes, a little bit.
And you'll have to also start with, what is co-regulation? That's a big word.
Well, I guess the first thing that to know is that children are born hardwired with the ability to connect to one primary caregiver. Their brains are wired to hear that voice, to pick it out of a group, to catch that smell, to orient themselves towards that primary caregiver. And when that relationship is disrupted, there's always going to be a period of time in which that child is left spinning, searching, if you will, for the primary caregiver that's supposed to be connecting to it and taking care of it.
I'm going to interrupt Jeff like I always do. So this is just the way we work.
I'm used to it. Not really.
Then even some of the families, they bring a baby home from the hospital, and they'll say, what went wrong? What happened? And just the fact that that child, the infant, was attached to mom before they were born. There's a whole attachment process that occurs. And then you bring the child home, and one person said, my daughter kept looking for another voice. So there's this whole traumatic experience of the child. Even though these are really great parents, they lost their whole world when they entered into this home.
The basic experience of the child is supposed to be, I experience a fear-inducing situation. And these are really simple, like my bottom is wet, or I'm tired, or I'm hungry, or I'm bored. All of these things are, they're mini traumas to a developing brain. And what the experience that child is supposed to have is they're supposed to be able to cry out with fear, and the primary caregiver is supposed to come and comfort that. Now, that happens so many times a day in those first 2 years, and so many times a week, and that the experience of the child pretty much is, I get afraid, I call, and someone comes and takes care of me. That sort of makes them believe, or puts the belief inside of them, that they're like the center of the universe. They're very important, and they're valued. When that caregiver doesn't come, or when they do come, if they're angry and stressed and unable to join with the child in their distress and then calm it down, then the child learns things like, I'm unvaluable. I'm a burden on my parent. And all of this is done without words, purely experientially in those early years. Once those beliefs get in there, then they're very hard to get out.
It's just such a miracle the way that we were all made just to connect in a very purposeful way. So some of these children, you're seeing them now after 2 years old and you're seeing the consequences. So what advice, what do we give in this book? Is this book for parents? Is this for teachers, educators, everyone?
It's an and. all the above. Yes.
When I first got into this field, I was very shocked at when you looked at attachment disorder and early trauma, that everyone seemed to know that it occurred and everybody seemed to know that it was a thing, but there were very few ways to treat it and very few ways or actual interventions and techniques that were designed to promote healing from this trauma. What the book is designed to do is it's designed to bridge the gap. We wanted it to be readable for parents so that they could use it to help themselves set up their own families to be healing for the child. But we also wanted it to be technical enough that providers and service providers could get insight into how they can assist the families in providing that healing home.
I like that you have a lot of case studies in here. Mm-hmm. I personally learn from reading about other people's experiences. Is there one that sticks out in your mind?
Well, the one obvious one, I was told to use my own personal story and my son's story throughout the book. So he had to give me a release to tell some of the stories. And I didn't tell
and
them all.
And how old is he now? Like, you
he
got him when? There. Tell us your story, please.
He came at 9.
Okay.
And, you know, I have an education degree. I had 3 birth kids. I was homeschooling. I thought I knew it all as a parent. We were successful. And then he came at 9, and I have a daughter who's 8, and they played well together. And then it was like she grew up and he didn't. And the behaviors really started a lot of stealing, hoarding food. Now it's all the, you know, the stereotypic behaviors that we see from these kids. And we had those and no one could help me. Everything was very behavior oriented. And, you know, we learned our lessons the hard way through that. He's now 30 and he still has these struggles, but our relationship is much better and there's a real trust that he trusts me. And that's when we start working with families, that's one of the places we start, because they have the belief system, I'm bad, parents are bad, the world's bad. And so if we can help the children learn to trust their parents, then the parents will be able to influence the child and that they're not bad. They just have some hurts.
Okay, so if I may ask you about your 30-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So thankfully he's trusting you now. Mm-hmm. Does that change his outlook on the rest of the world? For example, is he able to learn to trust his boss or trust a wife or trust a best friend? Or is that still really difficult for him?
That's still very difficult.
Okay.
It is. He will say, and he does act upon the trust with me, but his outside world, his whole belief system is still pretty much in
that. Still a little difficult to break through that. Let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
These children who are now adults suffering with reactive attachment disorder, and perhaps they've developed now into personality disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Are they somehow lacking, or it's broken, their insight? Like, a lot of us have insight. Like, I can say, oh goodness, I can tell from this woman's body language that I'm getting on her nerves. I better stop talking so much or whatever. But do they lack self-awareness and insight to their bad mood or their passive aggressiveness, whatever their personality issue is, might be hurting someone else? Or is it that they can't relate that somebody else has feelings, or that They're, explain that to me a little bit. It's probably like peeling back an onion, I know.
Well, Carla, I think our tendency is to look at that problem from that direction. But I believe what's actually happening is they don't lack insight. It's just that the acquisition of that insight you're talking about, that ability to read nonverbal cues and stuff like that, that runs through those filters in the back part of their brain that are different than ours. Therefore, they're seeing, it's not that they lack the ability to see those, or have those insights and see those cues and social cues in people. It's that they interpret them differently because of what they learned pre-verbally. Where, you know, we would interpret something as, oh my gosh, I made a mistake. Okay. They might interpret that same social cue as, this person's about to become aggressive and become a danger to me.
So I hear you saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that for some of these people who are suffering with this, it really is like a disease of the mind or the personality or social, I don't know what you would call it in your expertise area. I'm speaking like a layman, obviously. But, you know, it's really, like you say, I'm able to look at the glass half full or half empty. Like they really... they're looking at the same situation and they see it completely differently.
The newest research all comes from neurobiology. You know, when we talk about Bruce Perry or Dan Siegel or any of those, that it's all neurological based. So, yes.
So perhaps before that age too, when they were not attaching, which is how we were all created to attach to a caregiver and develop trust, something was broken inside of them.
Their brains were wired
differently.
And as we explain that to the parents, there's much more understanding and more empathy for the child when they say, it's actually brain-based. And, you know, Dan Hughes and John Balin wrote a book that's called Brain-Based Parenting just from that standpoint.
And it's important to know that the hurt that you're talking about is not a lack or a deficiency. It's a wiring issue. It's a connection issue. And those things, our brains retain plasticity far into adulthood. So that wiring can be changed. You know, we frequently encourage children to recognize you have a small part of you that was hurt, but that it's healable. And that you can heal it just simply by how you relate to the people around you.
And I think that was one of the problems that I ran into with my son. I didn't start learning all of this until he was 15, 16 years old. And I had a very small window. And I had 2 years. And we gave it every effort that we could. But we had 2 years. And that's all we could accomplish was changing the belief about me. But that was a big one for him.
Sure, sure. And you did your best, and I know that he's doing his best, and thank goodness that he had you as parents. And you're helping so many other people with this book. So October, this came out. Tell me a little bit about the holidays, because Christmas is right around the corner. So what do holidays, Christmas, look like for families who might have a child that's suffering with reactive attachment disorder? I might think that perhaps this might be a difficult time for these children.
Well, this is a current issue that just today I'm dealing with someone that the child, it's a young child, concerned about Santa Claus only bringing toys to good children. And if you have a belief about yourself that I'm bad, is this child is not expecting toys. And we've had an escalation in behaviors because I'm bad, I'll get nothing for Christmas. Then on the other hand, we have parents of the good intentions of their heart with all the grandparents and everyone who wants to give this poor orphan many, many toys with a belief system, I'm bad. Getting a lot of toys, there's a huge conflict. Many of the toys then get broken, lost, and destroyed, and everyone's feelings get hurt. So we really try to help the parents mediate the holidays in a different way than what they normally have done.
And your question is right on the money, Carla. The holidays are a very tough time for families with children with these problems.
And so I hear you saying that perhaps those of us who are loving these children we need to not be easily offended if they break the toy or if they leave it at our house and don't ask for it and search for it and look for it.
Yeah, we need to remember that they're going to be acting in such a way as to reharmonize their external world with their internal world. And they're going to be doing that at a very subconscious level. It's just going to come out in their actions. And with the holidays are very, I love you. It's so wonderful to be in relationship with you, have you in my life. And those things in themselves are going to cause the children to feel a little bit of fear, which often they don't recognize. And then they're going to act on it to, in some way, rebalance the scales and sort of get a you're bad message back from the adults.
I like to encourage families to buy things like magazine subscriptions. Then the gift comes every month to buy birdhouse projects or things that dad can help the kids build or mom can help the kids build, cooking, cookbooks. These are long-term interactive games, even sensory things. Some of our kids really need weighted blankets, which are very expensive, and family members can help with the cost of those. And the kids really appreciate it. It's odd the things that they like weighted blankets and vests from the sensory processing disorders that some of them have.
So many of the gifts and toys that are provided to children these days from our culture are they're not very often interactive or interrelative. And the healing for these children, in the same way the damage was caused in relationship with the primary caregiver or the disruption of that relationship, in the same way the healing is going to need to occur in relationship, in that relationship. So we would encourage any parent out there, when you're providing gifts and you're thinking about what to give this child, give things that are going to build relationship between the adults and the kid.
So spending more time, quality time with these children, not just over a long extended period of time, is building that trust, Faye?
Yes. Yeah. Why memberships are nice to go and swim with your kids. One of our Ys has racquetball,
okay,
courts, and you can do those. Just, it's all about the relationship. You know, you can't have a good marriage without spending time with your partner. Pleasant time, enjoyable time. Those are things that build endorphins and
the happy memories.
We're talking about dopamine and serotonin and all. Instead of most of the families are existing on cortisol and adrenaline, all the stress hormones, and even the parents' health can be in danger because of the stress hormones that they're producing.
Talk to me a little bit about post-traumatic stress disorder, because I think last time you were here, you shared that sometimes the parents or the children, because every time they're together, it's this tense, terrible moment, the parents might even start developing a little bit of post-traumatic stress disorder, which is so crazy.
Many of the moms say, oh no, it's 2:30, the bus is going to be coming in a half hour, and I'm starting to feel anxious. Because they really don't know what's going to happen when the kids get off the bus. And one of the analogies that we use is it's like an EMT. You don't know when you show up at the accident scene that if it's going to be a dead body or false alarm. And the parents truly don't know what can be happening, if there's going to be an escalation, if people are going to be hurt, or if it's going to be fine. They truly don't know.
But they've actually been rewired by having this child to start creating this anxiety every day at 2:30. So even in a healthy, we tend to have these tendencies, which perhaps can give us a little bit of empathy towards these children and adults who are suffering with us.
Yeah, and many of the moms will say, I feel crazy. And for their family members to help them with that and to help them normalize it, they can't go to soccer. They can't be a soccer mom and go in and say, you know, my child tried to burn down the house last night, or he ate a gallon of ice cream while everybody was asleep. Everybody thinks you're not, and you're not doing a good enough job as a mom. So they can't share their distress.
And yet they can't get along without sharing their distress.
That's right.
The worst thing they can do is try to spend all of their time, I mean all of their time as a mom,
mm-hmm.
and relating to the child, because what ends up happening is that the child's beliefs migrate to them. They need that time that's with support systems, with friends and family, where they can discuss these things and share those emotions and be validated, be told that they're normal.
So I encourage everyone listening, if you have someone in your life or a friend, please buy Faye Hall and Jeff Merkitt and John Beaver also is a co-author, Healing Traumatized Children, Navigating Recovery for Children with Turbulent Past. I know that we have a ton of listeners who are adoptive parents and they also foster children as well, because we're a big family. Mm-hmm. Your family matters. We talk about all of these topics. But you touched a little bit on moms and parents, I assume, needing support. Do we have support groups happening?
I'm glad you asked that and it wasn't prompted. But one of the things that's coming up are bosses setting up a program where Jeff and I will do a virtual support group twice a month away. The plan is it's going to be partially funded by any family that's involved in the Statewide Adoption Network's post-permanency program. That funding will enable families to be part of the virtual support group. Other families can join on their own with a reduced cost. We have the benefit within our family-based programs where we have funds that we can allocate to families to join the support group. With the virtual support group, it'll be an hour, as I said, every other week. There'll be training as well as time for questions and connecting with other people. So we have that one going, and then in Marietta, we have another support group that Jeff and I are training the families that come to that. But outside of, yes, support groups are extremely important, but it's good to find the right support group. Some of them end up being just complaining sessions without resolution, without training, without hope. And those families go downhill really quick. So you have to find a very positive, encouraging, and one that offers a lot of resources.
And there is hope. I hear you saying that there is absolutely hope for these children and these families. I love the idea of a virtual support group. Because of technology, we do not need to be in a brick and mortar mm-hmm. building anymore. So as long as someone has an iPhone or a computer, I mm-hmm. assume, they can tap into your meeting every other week.
And it will also be archived so that you can go back and listen. You'll get a year's membership. And these are all the plans that's in the works. You'll have a year's membership, and you'll be able to go back and review any of the archive sessions. So as we train on, let's say we're training on sensory processing disorder, they'll be able to go back and watch and listen to that one and share it with other people too.
So for all of my nonprofit directors who are listening, of Bethany Christian Services or Christian Adoption mm-hmm. Services, Catholic Adoption Services, how do they get in touch with you? How could they look at these podcasts? How could they become a member of this? Do they go to earlytrauma.com, which is your website?
For the virtual support group, they'll need to go to Jewish Family Service in Harrisburg. For that one. So our website has more just about the work that Jeff and I do.
Okay. So earlytrauma.com, that's your website with yes. Jeff. And yes. that tells all about the research that you've been doing about reactive attachment disorders and all of the amazing new things that are happening for parents, for professionals, the training that you're doing, all of your promos that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then lastly, tell us how we get your book. Is it available on Amazon? Any other places?
Yes, Amazon and New Horizon Press. That's the publisher. But it's something we've heard that even like you can buy it at Target. So, or at the Target website. So I really don't know. I know Amazon is for sure. But, you know, we just hear things from other people.
What I tell book fans to do with my books is if they walk into Target or Barnes & Noble's and they don't see my book, tell them to get it. So you can begin telling all of your fans, because I know that you have book fans. I know you told me that you've already been signing a ton of books. You can tell them that if they don't see your book somewhere, even if it's like Shady Maple and they want to see it there, to go and ask. And I have actually gotten my book into Shady Maple because people ask for it. So absolutely, I believe that this book, Healing Traumatized Children, does need to be in every book because this is something that has not been researched a lot. Am I correct in saying that? This is very new, isn't it?
Well, it's been researched, and we know this information now. The real tragedy is that it's not being disseminated to the people that need it. This disorder is healable. And there's still so many people out there that are not being given the tools to do that. And so many professionals out there who are kind of lagging behind in this area and don't know that this is a fixable issue.
One of the adoption agencies called us to come in and do a training for their group because she said she's the one who teaches their adoption curriculum. And she said, I know we don't cover this issue well. And so they asked us to come in and teach their group.
So you do go around and speak. Yes. You'll do whatever you need to do to help these families and help these children and help these teachers. And during the holiday season, is there a way that we could get sometimes to give the gift that's been signed by the author is so special? If my listeners get in touch with you through earlytrauma.com,
yes.
Are you able to sign books for them and
yes.
ship them out to them for Christmas?
Yes, we could do
okay.
that.
Excellent. So are there any last-minute thoughts that we need to know about? I know that we've just scratched the surface here.
For me, it's as Jeff said, this is something that healing is possible. Otherwise, our work would be in vain. So healing is possible. And our first goal is always to provide that trauma lens paradigm shift. With that, then you could start seeing the child different and move in a different direction. The whole family will move with that, but without the paradigm shift, many people get stuck in the behaviorism.
I know that your specialty is children, but I just wonder if your next book might be Healing Traumatized Adults.
I'm looking at Jeff on that one because every time I say, here's the next project, he kind of hides from me.
Little shivers go down my spine.
He has selective hearing.
When it does.
It sounds garbled, Faye. What
yes.
did you say?
Exactly right.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Merry Christmas. Happy
thank
New
you.
Year.
It's a real privilege for
thank
us.
You for
thank
having
you.
Us.
Congratulations on this book. And again, for all of my listeners here at Your Family Matters with Carla Dedesi, I want to thank Faye Hall, who's the program director, and Jeff Marquette, who is the co-director of Healing Hearts Family-Based Mental Health in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Please check out their website at earlytrauma.com and please purchase their book, Healing Traumatized Children, Navigating Recovery for Children with Turbulent Pasts. God bless. Everything is up on podcasts for you here at 1180 WFYL. And remember that you can stream in from everywhere. Thank goodness for technology. God bless. Have an awesome week. I'll see you back here next Friday.
Thanks, Carla. This is Nancy Houston Hansen of the Capstone Legacy Foundation once again bringing you an opportunity to understand about your Christian Community Foundation, how we can serve to you, and how we can bring you some very, very special expertise to support your gifting desires, and how Capstone can be part of it. Today I have with me Lynn Scarborough, our marketing specialist who's worked with our website and other aspects of marketing for Capstone, and Tom Kaiser, our CFO. And they're going to talk to you about how giving to Capstone can be a real ministry in itself and an opportunity to serve the community better. Welcome, Lynn, and welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nancy. It's just a delight to be here and always great to be with the folks at Capstone, and we're thrilled for... Thank you for taking some time to listen with us and share some of the great opportunities, because it's that time of year again, isn't it, Tom?
That's right. Yeah. December is a big philanthropic month.
Yes, yes. And we know we just wanted to reach out to those folks that may be thinking about where they want to maybe make a donation. And we'd like to share with you and let you know that Capstone would be thrilled to have you partner with us in the great work that we're doing, because Capstone is the only Christian community foundation in the Northeast dedicated to helping donors and givers support and build the body of Christ around the country. Capstone is also registered in every single state, so that gives a great opportunity opportunity for both donors and ministries to be able to do work all over the country. And first of all, let's go and talk a little bit about the why of Capstone. If you are not familiar with Capstone, there are several purposes that Capstone has. Tom, do you want to go ahead and share that?
Yes, we can help you with teaching you about how to give efficiently, involving tax efficiency, involving assets that you thought may not be donatable, like paintings or fancy old automobiles or real estate. Those things could be given away, and you get a tax deduction for the fair market value of those gifts.
Oh, that's great. So those are what we call non-liquid assets.
That's right. And Capstone has a network of folks who can help liquidate those things, and that money can then go into the net proceeds of the sale. That can go into your donor-advised fund at Capstone, which is one of the tools we have for helping you manage your giving. Then you advise us how to give that money away.
So what that means is if I want to make a donation, I put the money into Capstone, and then I can tell you where I'd like those funds
to be. That's correct. And great. The other thing that you would be helping us through is our what we call ministry charity projects, which are ministries that come to us to incubate their 501c3 efforts. We can provide the means for them for their donors to have tax-deductible donations and can help with their back-office needs.
Yeah, Tom, as you were explaining to me, it's more so a ministry who maybe, or a person who is wanting to set up a ministry, they can actually come to Capstone and set up their 501c3
yes.
under Capstone. But what does that mean? Do they still have all the expenses of setting up a 501c3?
No, they don't, because we are it. They come under our umbrella, and as you mentioned, Lynn, we're registered in every state, so they're able to raise funds throughout the country.
Oh, that's great. And in addition to that, so that saves the administration costs, and I love the fact it also saves the legal costs and also the time, because I know some people who've been wanting to set up ministries, you know, it could take years to get a 501c3 put together.
It does. The IRS is getting better at that, but there's still a tremendous cost. Unless you have a volunteer who's a lawyer, we can help you with that.
Yeah.
And what we're looking for at this point of time, though, for folks to help us by raising money to support Capstone's administrative efforts so that we can further these things and do them.
Yeah, because not only does Capstone empower givers by giving them the charitable giving solutions and different instruments, but Capstone also supports the ministries, sort of like a funding incubator, and by allowing them to be a 501c3 underneath it so they can raise their funds. But then what I also love about Capstone is it's such a kingdom multiplier. It builds collaboration. And
yes.
It's more than just, you know, that old analogy, you can give a person a fish and they can be fed for a day, but if you can teach them how to fish with the sort of the tools that Capstone has, doesn't that, it empowers them.
It does. And all the talents and knowledge and advantages of the staff and network of Capstone are available to these ministries that are seeking a place to land until, and they could stay with us indefinitely, or they can go off and finally set up their own 501c3. There's nothing that stops them from that.
Yeah, and I guess that there's a lot of people who may have funding dreams. They have dreams that they want to have, but then there's some people, you know, and that may be you. You know you want to give to something that makes a difference, but you don't know exactly why, and you don't know what organization really has integrity and is making, giving you the most for your donation dollar. That's one thing Capstone does, because we are servicing multiple places as well as educating people how to do it and serving a great number of people.
And yes, and we have the knowledge of other foundations that we're related to, so we're philanthropically savvy, if you will. I believe we know what we're doing. We can help people vet out organizations to where to give their money.
I love the one group, the one ministry that was in the Philadelphia area, Pennsylvania area, and now they have been able to start expanding to different chapters, state by state by state. That's incredible that we've been able to incubate and provide the
yes.
support system strategically. Capstone could do that so that they can begin to make an impact all over the country. So please consider Capstone as you're thinking of donations this year. And Ms. Hansen, I'll let you wrap us out here.
Capstone is located in Wayne, Pennsylvania. We're 900 West Valley Road. You can reach us by our website, which is capstonelegacy.org, capstonelegacy.org, or call us at 610-688-8890. Tom would be interested in taking your call, myself as well, or Lynn, anyone that you want to reach. We are here to serve you. Until then, God bless your living legacy.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.